You are about to experience Vegas Bad Boys of podcasting. Fortunately, you are about to hear lots of opinions, but rarely any facts. Impersonations might occur, but good luck trying to figure them out. This program is not intended for kids or the easily offended. Listener discretion is advised. You have been warned. You press play. It's too late to stop. Get ready to podcast.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Three Celts. I'm DJ Impact, and I got here Matt Michaels and Sin City Steve. Welcome, everyone. We got three good topics today, and I don't know, at some point it could get a little heated. It may not. We'll see. We have a lot to discuss.
It's time.
Vegas Bad Boys of Podcasting present.
One, two, three.
Count Talk.
Count Talk, baby.
But let's start off with our first topic, which comes, this report's pulled from Bleacher Report, and it's titled, Does Paul White signing by AEW leave WWE vulnerable to other talent leaving? Let me just read a little bit about what he says. He says, it's clear AEW doesn't mind shelling out the top dollars for anyone serious about joining up. So why not bring other WWE mainstays who look like lifers? Now, that might seem a little silly to build this all around the man formerly known as Big Show. I mean, his WWE act has grown stale and has getting to be eye-rolling when he would pop up randomly just to take a loss or two to an up-and-comer. Remember the odd WrestleMania thing with Drew McIntyre. It says he's not going to be some big ratings mover for AEW, and WWE isn't going to suffer greatly from the loss. It sounds like he will have the freedom to be a regular on broadcast as a commentator while getting in the ring here and there. And even this comes with a big but. AEW is using Sting at the ripe age of 61 so well, and there's nothing to say they can't do the same with Big Show. He also quotes what Mick Foley has said on his Twitter, which is, wishing you the very best, my friend, at Paul White on his signing at AEW. Says, I'm guessing the big fella thought he had done all there was to do at WWE, and there still has some gas left in the tank. That's the end quote. Lastly, he says, now, there is a risk to AEW going the TNA route, signing too many former WWE stars, hurt other promotions in the past, but based on the returns with ex-WWE signings and the context of signing like White, we're not at the point of worry just yet. All right, fellas, the question the writer asks, what's to say another massive name won't feel the same soon? So I'm going to ask you all that. I mean, this was a big story. Paul White, the Big Show coming over. And yeah, he makes a good point. It's not like, you know, Big Show's about to come over and this is really huge in what he's about to do for the ring. And, you know, it was kind of an eye roller when you see he pop up. But the bottom line is he is a big name. And he's been with the company for so long. He pretty much was a company guy, you know. And what's to say now that others won't? Should WWE not take this lightly and, you know, and now not think that, hey, there's a chance that some big star just may go over? What do you say, Sin City Steve?
Yeah, I think that, so, of course, when I saw that Big Show was signed, the very first thing that I did was I rolled my eyes. Only because I figured, okay, well, I've seen the way that he's been, you know, the way that he's been booked in WWE, and I know how much shit I always get on this show every Sunday or Monday or whenever the fuck you're hearing this. Whatever day it is, I take shit because AEW signs quote unquote former WWE guys.
Right.
Okay. And realistically, that objection is valid. You know, it's you have to walk a fine line. So ultimately, they cannot sign any and everybody that is a WWE cast off. I think that with this signing, this is hopefully one of the last like signings of this type, where quite frankly, I mean, the guy is what, 50 some odd years old.
I think it's 52.
52. Thank you very much. So, I mean, realistically, whatever company it is, if there's a 52-year-old that steps in and immediately takes a main event spot from somebody and is challenging for a championship, then that is something that I have a problem with. Mm-hmm. And I've made comment of such in the numerous ways that I've gotten, you know, I've gone off about Goldberg.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, people on the show, people listening to this right now that are hearing my voice will say, oh, what about Sting? Well, what about Sting? Okay. So he is being booked right now in a tag match where then at the end of the day, he's going to help to build at least one new star. Okay. He is not stepping in and immediately taking the world championship or a world championship opportunity away from somebody that is on the upward trajectory. Mm-hmm. I think that that's something that's very important that we keep in mind. Now, if they have Big Show come in and immediately he walks up to Kenny Omega and starts giving him shit and demands that he wants to wrestle Omega at a pay-per-view, then I'm going to come on here and I'm going to go off about that shit.
Mm-hmm.
Because that should not happen. Bottom line, if it does, then it would be hypocritical of me to not call it out. Okay. But realistically, I think that if they use White properly, that I think that, yeah, more power to him. Great. So he's going to be an announcer on a new hour block of programming. And okay, so he might wrestle a few matches here and there, but he'll be viewed as a special attraction. I don't see there being too much of a problem with that, as long as he's being used to help put younger people over and help to build those people up. So, you know, it is what it is, and who knows, maybe we'll finally get that Big Show versus Shaq match.
Possibly. That's possibly. But, you know, going back to the article, Matt Michaels, he says, yes, there is a risk to AEW going the TNA route, and that is signing too many former WWE stars that hurt other promotions in the past, and he hasn't seen that yet. But, I mean, with Tony Khan, with all the money that he's, you know, he's willing to shell out, what's not to say if he still had an opportunity for, I know it was rumored last year that at one point it was Orton that was considering or thinking or whatever that came from. But who's to say that, you know, he's, you know, may pull his money to grab. In his mind, grabbing these names are going to help build AEW. But, I mean, should he not have this same concern that he could go the TNA route as well?
So, I think that this is essentially just kind of a red herring topic.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning, the signing took place, and I think everyone lost their shit because no one really knew that the Big Show was out there.
Mm-hmm.
Simple as that, right? Okay. So you look at it from this perspective. Hey, Paul White, if someone is driving a big fucking truck full of cash on your doorstep and is willing to fucking give you this money, you take it.
Right.
Simple as that. You know what? The WWE was not, they were not going to give him what he wanted, and the idea here is that I think in the end, it's not even the fact he's not going to wrestle a lot at all. And Tony Khan went out there and said, oh, by sure, he is going to wrestle, which is great, because if you put him in one fucking match, then you've said exactly what you meant, is that he's going to wrestle. He did. Mm-hmm. I think they just paid a lot of fucking money for a commentator on a third show. God help if anyone in the business can get that kind of money to fucking sit down and talk and, you know, fucking take it. I mean, he'll be backstage, you know, he's well liked by everyone, and he'll be given his advice and probably doing some agenting or something like that. But the question you want me to get to is about other talent. Mm-hmm. Well, it's as simple as this. If talent's available, you make an offer. What the fuck? This is blowing my mind, because people are fucking stupid. Mm-hmm. You know what? Whether or not it works or doesn't work for the company who is taking the chance and investing the money, if you're going to offer money to a person and it's within their best interest to take it, why the fuck wouldn't they take it? It's as simple as that. Oh, they flirted with Orton. Yeah. Well, as the article also said, that Orton probably could have been just using that as leverage. Mm-hmm. And he probably didn't have wasn't going to leave or anything like that. But what fascinates me is the fact that what we're talking about is not people like Moxley. All right. Moxley, it's a no-brainer. Okay. Jericho was a no-brainer. With guys like Orton, it would be a no-brainer if you could sign him now. How old is Orton going to be when his contract runs up again? And so now what you're forcing AEW essentially to do is, okay, we didn't get him that time, but now this next time we're going to offer him even more money, and he's 5 years older. That is really stupid fucking business in that sense. So if you're really going to try to get a guy, they should have put everything in their fucking capacity to get Orton right then and there. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing. If these guys are going to come up, a guy like Big Show, where else was he going to go? They essentially just overpaid for a guy.
Yeah.
Because where else was he going to go? And if he goes back to the WWE, he's not going back under a full-time contract. He's going under a Legends contract with, you know, a handful of appearances here and there, and probably just being an ambassador, yeah. Right? In this case, I liken it like this. Tony Khan, at this point, if you found out The Undertaker was available where he could sign a contract, Tony Khan's going to put a lot of fucking money out for a guy like The Undertaker, who realistically is like Sting, ain't going to be able to wrestle worth shit.
Right.
And would you then use that guy in those types of capacities? So the next question is, if you're signing all these older guys, it becomes, what's the difference between Arn Anderson, Tully Blanchard, Sting, Taz, Big Show? Add more to that list, because you got a lot of fucking experience and knowledge. Yeah. If you can't, you know, if you can't figure out how to reap the benefits of those guys already, Jake the Snake's there, you know. So it becomes, now what you're doing is you're overpaying for guys who you're using for name recognition, but are not going to deliver in what the fans would think they're getting to see.
Right.
So, you know, I love how this person is like, all of a sudden, the author of this article is just like, what happens when Roman Reigns comes up? Yeah, what happens? He gets an offer. Duh. No shit.
Yeah.
I mean, come on, man. It's fucking business. You know what I would be? I would be more surprised if this story said that Ring of Honor or Impact Wrestling, mm-hmm, signed Paul White.
Mm,
Because then it would make you go, holy shit. Well, then Paul White must be doing this for a nice, you know, hey, I really want to be here and help you guys out.
Right.
This is like, I mean, I'm sure that he's going to have a good time at work, and I'm sure that, you know, but listen, it just comes down to realistically, who do you put, like, the Big Show in great shape will wrestle a few matches and stuff, but who do you put with him? You know, they really don't have. The Big Show was able to last so long in WWE because Vince had all those big guys. But outside of like Lance Archer and Brian Cage, they don't have a lot of huge guys. So that means Big Show's got to be putting over guys by throwing them like lawn darts into fucking trucks. Oh, Daddy Buck. So, yeah, I think that this whole hypothetical, it's pushing nonsense into making a fake war, a fake narrative.
Does this stop WWE from putting Show in the Hall of Fame?
No. Why would it? Seriously. First of all, Big Show's not going in the Hall of Fame within the next 10 years anyway, most right. likely.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I'll tell you, there's one thing that you got to give credit to Vince McMahon for. He gets it.
Mm-hmm.
Shit. Hey, pal, if you can go make that money, go make that money.
Yeah.
You know, Vince already got the 20 years out of the Big Show. And right. who thought he was going to get 20 years out of Big Show?
So, yeah.
No shit.
Yeah, no, I don't think that does anything in terms of his legacy with them. I think they'll continue to, you know, if there's reason to mention him in like documentaries and such, and they will.
Yeah.
It would have been different if Big Show was, if this was 10 years ago, it would have been a big deal.
Right.
It'd been a big problem.
Yeah.
But now this is literally like, you know, if you had a guy like Roman as a free agent and you didn't do everything in your power to sign him, but the WWE obviously didn't really want to put the money into Paul at this time. So,
right.
I mean, shit, you'd be saying the same thing about Triple H if Triple H wasn't married into that family.
Right.
You know, his worth on the market would be huge. But what would he ultimately be bringing? He would at least be bringing, you know, an inside knowledge of how things are done and booking and et cetera, et cetera. But the best you're getting about Big Show is advice and maybe an agent out of it. But, yeah, I don't know. I just think it's – what could we write about on a shocking news day? So
sure,
earning that pay per word.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll jump over then into our second story. And this is from thesportster.com. And it's titled Early Concerns for Where WWE Might Be Going with Apollo Crews. He starts off saying on Friday's episode of SmackDown, Apollo Crews officially turned heel. He stood in the ring and gave might be the best promo of his WWE career. There were shades of a real character shift and a call to his heritage, but where exactly is this heel turn going? And further down on there, it says some concerns for where it's going. Many believe there will be a transition change in the works that will lead to WWE introducing the Yuha Nation character Crews was before joining WWE. And I'm sure I'm going to mess up on his name, but it says Crews' real name is Seesaw Yuha. And while a full name change might not be in order, there are changes in the works. At the same time, WWE plans to tread carefully when it comes to comments about Crews being a, quote, real African-American, end quote. The need to carefully walk the line of how they represent this character without the insinuation that his culture automatically means he's a bad guy. WWE has run into similar situations with Mustafa Ali character, which has led to rapid changes of that halted his momentum. And at the same time, they've done well with Roman Reigns as the head of the table gimmick that calls upon the aspects of the Samoan culture. They're confident they can do Cruz's new character justice. So guys, you know, when I read this, it was interesting because I guess I can understand they're saying that they have to carefully walk the line, but I would say from watching it, I didn't see anything that made my bells ring going, what you're doing with Cruz? Why is he, why is it he's making African Americans look bad, or why he's using that term, or why is he making Nigerians look? If I didn't see any of that, if I would, I would be the first one who throw that out there. But I will say that this new character that he is building is making him look strong, making him actually look better than what he was doing before. And I'm really sold on what I am seeing may come out from this. We've been waiting for Apollo to show for some time, and it looked like this may be happening. So I understand, you know, they brought up Mustafa Ali character and Roman Reigns, and it's something that they have to keep in mind when you're going to kind of tread that line. But I didn't see anything wrong with this, and I'm just curious. Did you guys see anything wrong or any concerns you may see that could happen with what they're doing with Apollo?
I'll speak for myself and Steve by simply saying, no fucking way either of us are going to touch this. Nice try, DJ. try to throw that on the two white guys. Thank you, man.
Well, hey, the other black guys didn't show up, so I guess I'll just we'll just go with my with me again. I was just curious as to what your thoughts may be as just the character building of what you're seeing coming with Apollo as of right now. But as again, in terms of where they see that this can be going, I don't see at this moment this being something that could be an issue. Sure, it could go left. I don't see that where that's happening right now. But just the overall character that you see that's now, you now seeing what Apollo is becoming. What are you guys liking of that, or maybe dislike of that?
I am extremely happy that they are finally giving him a chance to showcase what he can do. I saw him on the indies as UHA Nation, but he was, again, a baby face, like a completely likable baby face.
Sure.
That wowed everybody with his, you know, aerial moves, but also his strength. Legitimately a true hybrid athlete.
Right.
And somebody that I was a fan of for a very long time.
Yeah.
I think that he has been criminally underused during his time in WWE. They've made a caricature out of him, and they've defined him as being, you know, someone that he smiles a lot.
Sure.
That's his gimmick.
Right.
That's bullshit. That's absolute bullshit.
Yeah.
Like, they're finally giving him a chance to show some character. And in that one promo, he built himself up more than any other anything that he's ever done in WWE combined.
Yeah.
I agree. I think that I'm extremely happy with what they did, and I'm really interested to see where this takes us.
So the big thing here is what's the big deal between what he's doing and what the Nation and Domination did.
Right.
And he literally has this heritage.
Yeah.
So it's not like they're... So,
it's not like the Kofi Kingston thing.
Well, Kofi still had
heritage. No, but I'm just saying, like...
Yeah.
Here's one.
They made him again, and almost a caricature when they first brought him in.
Sure.
And I think that it's it's ridiculously short-sighted the way that they've been portraying a lot of their roster. And this is long overdue.
But the biggest factor with Kofi is kind of the opposite, which is fascinating. So they brought him in and they allowed him to do the Jamaican accent.
Right.
And to capitalize on the fact that he was, you know. Mm-hmm. But with Cruz, it was the totally opposite.
Yep.
So we're going to make you this. And now we're going to give you a chance to be yourself in terms of your heritage. What I absolutely hated was the fact that all of a sudden in mid promo, now he starts getting his accent. Like, you know what you could have done? You could have actually just started fucking building it out of, you know, vignettes or promos or, you mm-hmm. know, things that he was doing around town, or, you know, fucking do something other than having him come out with the cloth around his neck now. And all of a sudden it was like he put on the cloth around his neck made him this character.
Right.
And it's mm-hmm. that's kind of like, listen, he has every opportunity now because he's playing a heel to be a heel.
Yeah.
And you know what? That doesn't have any connotations of, oh my God, he's African, so he's a bad guy. No, it's ridiculous.
Right.
All right. The real truth of the matter is, if he was just taking what he was given before for all these years now in the WWE and flipping that heel, it wouldn't have worked. He'd be gone. He would be getting released.
Yep.
If this does not work for him, he will be getting released.
Yep.
This is it.
Do you believe WWE, I mean, should they be credited for kind of allowing him to, you know, take control, you know, of, like, I'm assuming he came with them with this character that he had in the past, and they've signed off with saying, okay, if this is something, you know, that you believe that will work, we will sign off on that, versus us now, what we've been giving you haven't been working, apparently. So I guess at some point what you're saying could be working, that if it don't, but at least they're trying what he wants to do now. Could we at least say that?
I don't know if we can say that, because we don't know. We don't know who came up with the idea.
Exactly.
This came out of fucking left field.
But I'm not familiar with his past, but according to Steve, the UI Nation was something that was created a long time ago. So I'm assuming.
But you're asking if he came forward to them.
Right.
We don't know if he came forward to them or they came forward to him.
So you're saying that they came to him and said, hey, we saw your work with UI and we think you should do that.
Well, they absolutely saw his work, because that's how we got signed.
Right.
So it's like this. We don't know. I'm not going to say mm-hmm. that it was A or B, because we don't know. What I can see happening is the fact that they wanted to turn him heel. All right. And I'm sure that if it wasn't him, then it was someone creative who basically said, well, why don't we tap into your roots? You know, let's use this. I think that it most likely was them coming to him, because this, like I said, this feels like it's the last ditch effort.
Gotcha.
So, you know, the other thing too is that I think a lot of times it probably was just kind of talking between the wrestler and the agents and the writers, and people just getting to know, you know, a little bit. He's been around long enough for people to know who the fuck he is, you know? So they have an idea of what his heritage and background is. And what's interesting about this isn't necessarily this idea of treading about, you know, him, you know, being careful about, you know, not making it look like they're stereotyping black people as militant or whatever. I think the genius here is that the safe play would have been to do the Wakanda type thing. You know, the good guy, the maybe he had prince heritage, blood in his, you know what I'm saying? Like, make him use the popularity of Black Panther to then make him this ultra baby face who, you know, has maybe even had superpowers. So I almost feel like that's exactly what was pitched by someone. And he might have came back and said, hey, what if I was a bad guy? Because it's smarter to do this as a villain because it ain't being done right now. So it has, the reason we're even talking about it is because it actually has the potential to work. Because you don't see it being done.
Right.
So,
well, no doubt. We will keep our eyes out on that and see where it goes. You know, good stuff right now. So we'll see. And I'm sure we'll bring this up in the future. WrestlingInc.com is our third topic. And now it's time to really get down to some business here. They title it, I see you, Sin City, AEW Dominates 2020 Wrestling Observer Awards and WWE Wins Most Disgusting Promotional Tactic. It says, not only did AEW have the most winners this year, but they also dominated the list of top nine runner-ups in all positive awards, and WWE dominated the list of negative award winners and runner-ups. Some of the positive categories featured none, just one or two WWE nominees. All right, guys. Hopefully you have the list right in front of you. I have mine, and I'm just going to ask this question. What the fuck? Most outstanding wrestler.
I think that was the best thing you've said all night, brother.
Whatever. Get out of here. AEW.
No, I'm agreeing with you.
I know you are. Tag Team of the Year, AEW. Best on the Interview, AEW. Promotion of the Year, AEW. Best Weekly Show. Hey, let's get down to the bullshit. Best Gimmick, AEW, Orange Cassidy. But worst gimmick, The Fiend, Bray Wyatt. The worst gimmick. The worst. Worst promotion of the year.
Wait. You want to talk about the bullshit? Let's also go with that best TV announcer, Excalibur, and worst, Michael Cole. Not a big Michael Cole fan, but Excalibur?
Right.
Excalibur is Michael Cole with a fucking mask on.
Pretty much. Absolutely. Everything just reeks of best booker, promoter of the year. I mean, everything, all of this... AEW, best flying wrestler. Most over.
My guy printed it out like old school MapQuest directions.
Yeah. This is crazy. Most overrated Bray Wyatt, huh? He's overrated. He's most overrated.
Hey. So here's the thing. So I have to put this out there. This is something that's voted on every year by readers of the Wrestling Observer newsletter.
And they're stupid then.
Okay, well, that's definitely your opinion.
Yeah.
Just like how it was the opinion of the however many thousands of respondents they got.
Well, apparently...
cast a ballot.
Apparently, all of them just must be lovers of AEW and haters of WWE.
Well, obviously, because they're all fucking smarks. But they didn't vote on this. This is fucking Meltzer doing the same shit he does all the fucking time. You know it's true, dude. You know that Meltzer makes this shit up because he's getting paid by the fucking company.
No.
Okay, let's look at okay.
Okay.
John Moxley, Wrestler of the Year. Agreed, everyone?
Yeah. Yes.
Yep.
Okay.
I said that when we were talking about who was going to get those awards.
You don't have to defend everything. We're just going to, you know, we all agree. Outstanding wrestler, current AEW World Champion Kenny Omega. Outstanding wrestler. Really? Really? DJ, any other person come to mind? Outstanding wrestler?
There's a lot of outstanding wrestlers. I mean,
who would you put over Omega?
I put Roman Reigns right away.
Okay.
I would do that too.
Even though Roman Reigns, keep in mind,
Roman
Reigns was gone for over half the year.
And so was Kenny Omega's
career.
I'm well aware.
So, I'm just getting all that out there.
I tell you this, I wouldn't even have to go with that big of a name. I would throw Cesaro there.
Okay, now you're fucking insane. You got to at least give it some merit of a little type, a little more top tier than.
So for the record, Cesaro did qualify for number 4 on the list for most underrated. The thing that really stands out to me is that it's not so much a slight on a lot of these WWE wrestlers. It's more so a slight on the creative behind those wrestlers. So for instance, if you look at the most underrated or most underpushed characters, okay, you've got in order, Ricochet, Chad Gable, Riddle, and 4 was a tie between Cesaro and Mustafa Ali, Keith Lee. And then it's not until you get to number 6 that there's a name outside of WWE on the most underpushed or underrated list.
Yeah, I wonder why. Because all the other fucking people who have won are on AEW's roster. You have no space for anyone to be underrated because they're all fucking overrated. Tag Team of the Year, the fucking Young Bucks? Really? Come on. Come on. I mean, if you're going to say that the Street Profits didn't put in better work this year than the Young Bucks, come on. Eddie Kingston, best on interviews?
I was about to go there myself.
I would say Mox, but that's just me. Mox and MJF.
Roman Reigns.
Sami Zayn.
Roman Reigns is in my top 3, top 4 for sure.
Paul Heyman, for God's sakes, I would even go with him probably over any wrestler, you know. Promotion of the Year, fine. Best weekly TV show, arguable, but fine. Pro wrestling match
for Dynamite. Wait. So Dynamite over SmackDown?
Yes. SmackDown is the best WWE branded show per week, except for NXT. Well, it varies depending on your booking staff. I'd say Dynamite, NXT, SmackDown for me.
Interesting.
And like I said,
every other show on the planet, and then last Raw.
Well, yeah, for sure, Raw last, but I don't know if AEW wouldn't be top for me.
But I mean, Young Bucks and versus Adam Page and Kenny Omega, is the match of the year. Come on,
I would say that it's between that or Okada and Ibushi for me. Okada and Ibushi from night 1 of Wrestle Kingdom 14.
I mean, fuck, I probably would put other matches in AEW probably above that even. Is anyone, what is best box office draw and why is Conor McGregor there?
That's not confined to pro wrestling. That's confined to any combat sport. And basically it's going to be, because they do MMA awards as well. So,
well, I'm laughing because there's nothing else on this fucking list that reflects anything MMA at all. So that's why I found that really odd.
Gotcha.
Feud of the Year, Moxley, Eddie Kingston. Come on. Come on, man.
Yeah.
Feud of the year. Like, oh, fuck. Most improved Britt Baker. Really? Charismatic MJF? Sure. Yeah. Sure. I mean, you know, and DJ's
can,
right.
Can we give a shout out to the winner of the Rookie of the Year, though? Mr. Pat McAfee.
Yeah.
Stepping in, absolutely killing it for NXT.
I'd give him, though. Here's my problem. He wrestled one match. That's my problem with that. I think if you're going to give all these other awards to people who wrestled, right? McAfee, I mean, hey, if you want to take McAfee and put him in the category of best on interviews over Eddie fucking Kingston, then yeah, I would agree on that. But I think you could probably find someone who might be, you know, more of a common, you know, an every week wrestler. Best non-wrestler, Taz. Come on, man.
I don't necessarily agree with that. I would say Heyman.
Yeah, I think Heyman by far. Kenny Omega's one-winged angel, best wrestling maneuver. I mean, really? Is it real? I mean, I don't know. There is just some shit on this fucking list that, you know, especially best booker, Tony Khan.
Right.
Really? And the thing is, he won that. It doesn't say it in this particular article, but the number of votes that he got for best booker, like, it wasn't even close. He got over 1,000 votes for best booker, which is insane. So I think the next closest was like 43.
Yeah, it's insane for someone who doesn't fucking book the shows. I could see promotion, sure. Yeah. But if you're, you know, I don't know, man. I think you could find stuff. If you look at the overall picture, it just seemed that the inclusiveness in terms of sucking off guys like Omega and the Bucks, it's Mox, fine, no problems with Moxley, but really Kenny Omega didn't do shit until the last, what, 2 months of the fucking year.
Yeah, I mean, it's largely, you know, his 2020 was spent as part of a tag team. So yeah, I think that's something that a lot of people are forgetting.
And it wasn't a good tag team, you know, in terms of, you know, comparing them to some of the other tag teams that, you know, were around this year. So it's like, I mean, it's almost like saying in a flip that, well, Hangman Page obviously was the best wrestler, you know, just like, dude, because he's got the title and I would also argue that Kenny Omega's character was not anything in AEW. I'm not going to fucking go to Japan because I think that's where if these were legitimate votes, a lot of minds are giving him, you know, the Japan Kenny Omega because they got a little excited. But Don Callis is the guy who's fucking made him so far. And if there's one thing that I think you could easily say is the MVP of AEW is Don Callis, and he doesn't even fucking technically work for them.
And incidentally, so best non-wrestler went Taz, Heyman, then Don Callis at 3. So,
which is, again, it's a fucking crime that Taz
beat both of them. Yeah. So what? Here's the thing is I'm not going to be drinking the AEW Kool-Aid on everything, but you know, there are some things that I will. I think Don Callis definitely helped to flesh out the Kenny Omega character. and he's without a doubt made him much better than if he wouldn't be a part of you know, what's going on right now. But as far as, you know, in terms of, you know, so you mentioned move. So best wrestling move. One winged angel. Then the buckshot lariat was number two. And then number three was the buckshot V trigger. So clearly you've got people that were all about Kenny Omega that, you know, that cast these votes. Right. So that should tell you right there kind of what a majority of the respondents felt. I mean, you know, the Kamigoye, which is Ibushi's finisher, is at number four. And quite frankly, it's up there with the one winged angel, in my opinion. Now, one thing that we do have to mention is the most disgusting promotional tactic did go to WWE for what they did in 2020 by firing everyone during the pandemic.
I will agree with that.
Any objections on that?
I would agree.
I do object, in this being said, that it is a business move. Okay. Yeah, it was a pandemic. But what this said was it was done during the pandemic while the company was reaping in a lot of money. You got to remember, when they did the firing, that's when the XFL was going under. And the truth of the matter is that those two organizations, WWE and XFL, the money wasn't supposed to be crossing, apparently. So they made the releases. And what's funny is those guys all got hired somewhere. Shit. One guy got hired back to the company right away.
Right.
So,
for better or for worse.
Right. I think that
I think that was still a bad thing to do during that particular time. Business or whatever, it was still, they wasn't in a situation where they had to do that or was going to kill the business. If you have a company, and I understand Ring of Honor have not even a tenth of what they have, but if they can maintain their wrestlers until they could get something going, and we know that WWE has all the cash in the world.
So let me ask you this, though. Let me ask you this, very simple. So they keep those wrestlers, all right? Now the fans are going, well, boy, they don't use EC3 at all. Well, then what the fuck? So you're keeping them, pay them just because we're in a pandemic. This allowed them an opportunity to at least seek other work and actually work. That's how I look at it. But I can respect the opinion of that it's not great to do that. But at the same time, we've never been through a pandemic before. So you would like to think that if you know, 5 years from now, there is another massive pandemic to the way that we, you know, went through it this first time, right?
Don't you dare put that out there.
I'm just saying, you hope that they would have learned, they will learn from the mistake, right?
You would hope.
I also think that using the pandemic in any sense against any company or wrestlers is kind of it's an unfair crutch, because if you look at it, there's so much that was so different this year that overall everything done by this pandemic was a move done because of the pandemic. You know, you could say that, well, they fired the wrestlers, sure, they laid off personnel, sure. But at the same time, you know what they were able to do? They were still able to produce a fresh product. I agree with you. ROH, yeah, they took care of their guys. ROH didn't have an actual show until just a couple months ago. So they had to just put regular, you know, cut, you know, highlights and past matches on TV. So
I get all that. I get all that. But again, to me, it doesn't make sense if you don't have to put people out primarily to fend for themselves during this time, because just as much as you believe it's traumatic for the company, it's just as traumatic as it is for them as an individual.
But DJ, you're also approaching it as if I can understand the employees. See, this is I think where the cross is too. The employees, that was harsh. But the wrestlers, dude, if you're not saving that money that you're making, they're making more than you are, bud. So I don't shed a tear for, you know, someone getting released when you should always be planning in this business to get released. So you better have your money put aside.
Well, sure. But I mean, in that case, we all should be putting our money aside just in case we get released. Facts. From a job. I get what you're saying. If that had to be an award, I would have to agree. I think that was a fucked up time to do it. It's just, I get it from a business sense. I get it from an individual sense. But I'm just saying,
Let me ask you this though. Isn't it weird to you that really, that's the only question that could really have that as an answer? Meaning,
well, sure.
that question was specifically put in here.
Who else? What were the other options on there, Steve? Do you know?
So for most disgusting promotional tactic, let me back to that. So we already talked about one. Number two, WWE operating without COVID testing.
Okay.
Number three, WWE banning talent from third-party opportunities. Number four, WWE running in Saudi Arabia.
Okay.
Number five, AEW continuing Matt Hardy versus Sammy Guevara. Number six, Rey Mysterio losing his eye angle. Number seven, Dana White attempting to run a show on a Native American reservation. Number eight was a tie. WWE continuing to employ wrestlers with sexual misconduct allegation and Bushiroad's handling of the death of Hana Kimura.
Oh, my boy. Okay.
Yeah. And then last was WWE turning Drake Maverick firing into a storyline.
Well, I actually don't see nothing wrong with that. But I mean, if Drake was willing to accept that, I mean, why not? I mean, you know, if he was like, oh, hell no, I don't think that shit's funny, then, but my guess is he probably was, shit, you hire me back? Fuck, that does make a great, they make storylines out of real life situations all the time. I mean, there's a lot of different things on there. I mean, they, they could have added AEW also with mishandling COVID as well. They had quite a few people that got sick. I don't know why that wasn't up in there. You know,
well, just because they had people get sick, that's totally different than them holding shows with almost refusing to COVID test, which that's the way that WWE did operate when they first got everything started back up, is they refused to COVID test.
Now, are we 100% sure that AEW didn't do the same thing?
I don't know, man. Like
that's the whole thing. We don't know. And we only know what Meltzer feeds us and tells us was what the truth was.
True. I do want to give a quick shout out though. Typically whenever these lists of awards come out, there's always the Luthez Ric Flair Award, which is for Wrestler of the Year. That's the big, that's the big prize. And traditionally, although women's wrestling hasn't, although women's wrestling has broken through a glass ceiling and they've made a lot of positive moves in the right direction, in regard to the way that, you know, those talents are treated and the way that they're showcased, traditionally they don't fare very well in this particular ranking. There's still a men's MVP and a women's MVP, but, it's rare to see a couple of women's names on the top 10 for the Luthez Ric Flair Award.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty cool. So number 10 was Chris Jericho. Number 9 was Mayu Iwatani from Stardom, ROH. Mm-hmm. I know that she's been everywhere. She's a very, very skilled wrestler. 8, Roman Reigns. 7 was Go Shiozaki. 6 was Bayley, which is awesome that she pulled that high in this listing. I know that I don't think that there's ever been a year where a female competitor has come in at number 1. I know that there have been, I think that Ronda got like number 3 or 4 the year that she was that she first broke in.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, having 2 women on this list and 1 at number 6 is pretty awesome. Rounding out the rest of it, 5 was Matt's favorite, Drew McIntyre. 4, Kota Ibushi, Impact's favorite. 3, Tetsuya Naito. 2, Kenny Omega. 1, obviously, John Moxley.
Gotcha. Well, they're slowly moving up. Bayley,
definitely.
Bayley was on fire, you know.
She had an amazing year. She had an amazing 2020.
Like, I mean, even when you think of best match, I mean, I'm assuming, can women be on best matches of the year? I mean, her and Shasta's match, I mean, it had a few of them, but you could choose probably either one of them to be one of the best matches, you know, versus I saw one of the names on here. I ain't going to try to go through and find it, who actually won the best match. I think it was...
That was the...
Omega and Paige versus the Bucks.
Yeah, but yeah, so... But yeah, so yeah, shout out to Bayley. I mean, she's doing it and still holding strong on the show even today. So yeah, absolutely. I guess in March is we celebrate women's which why not give a shout out to Bayley for being on that list. And you know, I think when we have our podcast this month, we'll just kind of recognize this different women in the wrestling business that has just been doing their damnness in the ring and just, you know, showing that they have, you know, just belong in this particular industry, know? So we'll start it off with Bayley first, but we'll see where the...
And obviously, Bayley won the Women's MVP Award as well. She won the award. Iwatani was 2. Sasha Banks, 3. Let's see here. Asuka was 4. Shida was 5. Io Shirai, 6. Julia was number 7. Mm-hmm. Thunder Rosa was 8. Yuka Sakazaki was 9. And 10 was a 3-way tie between Dr. Britt Baker, DMD, Serena Deeb, and Hana Kimura.
I can't believe the most improved was also the 10th on that list. That just shows you right there.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah. All right, guys. That's our 3 count for tonight. Any final thoughts, Sin City?
Thank you guys for hanging out with us. Thank you for liking, sharing, subscribing, all that kind of fun stuff.
Yeah.
We appreciate you guys. Also, special shout out to all of the brave men and women serving our country on lands both foreign and domestic.
Mm-hmm.
We appreciate you. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Last but not least, repsports.com, REPPsports.com, promo code Vegas. Go there for all your pre-workout, weight loss, and general nutrition needs. Mm. Again, repsports, REPPsports.com, promo code Vegas. Save yourself 15%.
How about you, Matt Michaels? Anything?
Yeah, this past week we lost another person who was very much one of the biggest parts of NWA, and that was Joseph Hudson.
Mm-hmm.
Question mark. You know, it's so sad when you see, you know, guys who are in their early 40s. Just passing away without any, you know, any known illness or anything like that.
Yeah.
And You know, he was very close to Billy Corgan, very, very much a part of Dave Marquez's life, you know, as well as many of the other wrestlers from Southern California and Florida and, you know, around the country. So, you know, it's a sad thing. Go to his GoFundMe that was set up by his wife, Nancy Hudson, and contribute if you can. Also, Golden Boy Jerry Gray is still battling stage 4 cancer, and it's been a tough ride for him. It's been really a tough year. And you can check out his GoFundMe as well. You know, just remember, you know, give back to some of these people that have given so much for many generations over the years to be entertained.
Absolutely. Thank you for that, everyone. Thank you for listening and for subscribing, and we will we'll check with you next week. So with that, we'll see you next week. Take care. Peace.
Biggest Bad Boys of Podcasting.